Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Real Paranormal Activity, the network. Entertainment you'll enjoy.
You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. LaFosse Corporation, LLC.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Emmons, and this is the Dave Emmons Show. I call it Chit Chat without the S. Of course, there's a lot of video.coms out there who tell you anything just to get clickbait, but we don't. We try to tell the truth. And today I am talking about a movie that everybody should see. And my guest, John Yost, a good buddy, real straight guy, straight up guy. That's why I honor this film that he has. We're going to play you a clip of it, but I want to introduce him first. This is going to be, of course, abductions and ET sessions. I know I talk current events sometimes, but also I do a lot of ET talk with my book, They. But here is John Yost, the senior producer, SAG, AFTRA, AEA and AGMA, Rhino Pictures, rhinopictures.com, and it's a division of Rhino Productions. I know he's been doing this for 30 years, if he doesn't correct me on that. I think it's been about 30 years you've been involved in picture making and movie making.
Sure.
And this movie that he's got is really great, and I think a lot of people have maybe seen the advertisement on it, but we're going to play it here in a minute. But I just want to introduce John Yost first. And John, is there something that you want to tell us about what's going on in your life right now?
Well, Dave, I want to say this. First of all, thank you very, very much for the time to chat with you. I think you're just a great guy. I really liked your book, They, and I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to have this conversation with you. In addition to that, you said a little earlier, you said, you usually talk about current events. Well, if you think about it, with all of the Senate hearings and all of the announcements from NASA, what we're about to talk about is current events, too.
Right.
So I'm excited to have our discussion today.
Okay. I think we'll go ahead and we'll play this movie. We'll see how it goes. And like I was just telling John a while ago, everybody, that I'm not a techie person. I'm handling my own show on this one now. And I'm going to see how well I've done this thing. Let's see how it works. Okay, John, let's go.
This is not communication. It's communion. Hundreds of thousands of people have claimed contact. That will change you. It changed me.
Lost in.
This was something that I kept buried for years. Strange things would happen. I didn't want anything to do with it anymore.
He came at me, and I fought for my life.
Ships started to pop up in the sky.
And there's this bizarre disc of light. It is moving across the sky very fast.
The experience is often very terrifying.
If I felt fear, I would crawl under my covers, hoping that it would go away, whatever it was.
I know that we were put in that craft. I knew I was going to go to another planet.
And the being was right next to my face.
He saw two shadow beings. That's when I felt like I was going to die.
I had a real encounter with something. Even if I had to live with the fear, is to know the truth, is to know.
Now, that was great. I like that trailer, John. And the movie, I had a chance to see that. Great movie. And I'm an experiencer. And man, did you hit me between the eyes with that movie. And Whitley Strieber, you couldn't have asked for a better person to help you narrate that film. I looked him up here a while back. I knew he was big in the UFO and ET abduction area. But man, he's got a lot of books and movies to his credit. He's phenomenal. Let's say it that way. I honor that guy. And you having him on that movie was a great, great thing to do. And John, could you tell us a little bit why you got into this movie and how it all happened?
Sure, Dave. As David said, I've been in the business for quite a long time, 25, 30 years. And we do all kinds of business. I mean, we do sports, we do history, we do food sections, we do... Oh, you know, we work for a lot of different big, big companies, Esquire, Fox, History Channel, that sort of thing. And about 6 years ago, we started to develop our own content. And we would create our own shows for television. And we were on a shoot for one of those projects. This is about 3.5 years ago. And we were in a place called Borrego Springs, California. And if you've never been there, it's very flat. It's very arid, like desert. And we were doing a night shoot, which is normal for us. And we came back to this big house that we had rented. And me and my team, we were downloading all the footage and all the audio down to hard drive so we wouldn't lose it. And we had, you know, some redundant storage. And a bunch of us went out to the back of this house to have a nightcap. And there was a big pool there. And so they break open some wine and they're about to pour. And I hold up a glass like this, like over my shoulder. So they're pouring and we're going to give a toast, just a simple toast. And in the glass, I saw this glint of light. And my mind is racing to try to figure out, you know, what is that? You know, you're always trying to... associate something with it or categorize it. And my mind said, oh, that's the moon. That's the moon. And then I went, wait a second. That's not the moon. Well, the reason we shot tonight was because there was no moon. It was a new moon. It was black outside. So I'm confused by this. And as I drop my glass to bring to my lips, I see behind my glass about 30 feet away and 30 feet in the air above the house that we were in, this, it's in a regular shape. It was almost like an egg, but it really wasn't an egg. And it was this blue-green kind of luminescent, self-illuminating color that was coming from it. And my mind is racing to figure out what the hell this is. And I say to myself, ah, this must be a Mylar balloon. You know, you go into a hospital and you get a get-well balloon, that sort of thing. And take it. But this thing that I see, is about, it's as big as a Volkswagen. So that went out of my mind immediately. And just as I'm watching this, this happens really fast. I grab one of the guys right beside me, Scotty, and I turn him. He looks and he says, oh my God, right? And then we were out there with about, you know, 15, 17 people. People turned around, they all looked, oh, wow, look at this. Oh, they're incredible. I am losing my mind. This thing moves so fast, Dave. It moves, right above my head and stops. And it freezes there for just a second or two. And then it zips away, just a little way away from me, and it stops. And then it drifts off into the desert. We probably watched it for, I want to tell you, because it was so flat, we could watch it for almost 2 minutes. And then it blinked out. And everybody is talking about, wow, this is, you know, great and everything else. But I felt like the world had dropped out from underneath me. When that thing went right above my head, it stopped. I thought I was going to die. I couldn't breathe. And so, you know, I'm in charge of this team. And so what I do is I take a little sip of my wine, kind of put it down, make a joke about, you know, we've got an early morning tomorrow and a lot of paperwork to do. I can't hang out with you jokers, you know, this sort of thing. And I go back to my room and I barricade the door. I take all of my luggage and one of the beds and I push it up against the door. And I sat in a corner and I had this terror go through my body that I cannot explain to you. You see, when I was 7 years old, it was August 1974. It was a hot night. We didn't have air conditioning. And I woke up one night when I was seven to hear this kind of hum, like a droning hum. And it disturbed me. I couldn't go back to sleep. But I'm sitting on the side of the bed and I rub my eyes and I go to the bathroom, you know. And I'm in there and I wash my hands and I get a glass of water and stuff. And the water's running for a long time. And finally, I turn it off and I open the door. And when I open the door, right in the doorway, facing me, was, to my eyes, a character I had seen 100 times on television. When I was a kid, there was a show called Ultraman. And it was a Japanese character. He was a giant, and he was silver and red, and had these huge eyes, and he fought the bad guys. So when I see this thing, I mean, it's not a giant in my eyes. It's as tall as I am. But I'm not afraid, right? And so I get real close to him. And when I say close, I mean, Dave, like nose to nose, nose to nose. And then something started to happen. The way I describe it to people is this. I say, you know, if you've ever been in a big underground pool, right, an in-ground pool, and you get to that part where the water's right about here, you know, and if you take one more step, you're going to slip underneath. It felt like that. Like if I took one more step, I was going to slide under and drown. I felt the whole world kind of tilt. There was this big flash of light, and then all of these lights, a kaleidoscope of lights. I felt like I was moving. I was unsure. And this whole thing is happening. And I'm struggling. I mean, I'm throwing fists. I'm throwing hands because I don't like this at all. And this is crazy. And I'm you know, kind of crying. I'm yelling, I'm fighting. And when I come to myself, I'm still in the middle of this fight, but something really weird has happened. The back of this entity, this Ultraman, is now in the bathroom where I was. And my back is to the hallway where he was. Well, somehow we got flipped. And I'm looking, but I'm in mid-fight. And so as I do this, this entity raises his, I say his, I don't know, raises his hand, his right hand, and he touches me right here on the shoulder. There's this brilliant flash of light, and I feel this power go through my body, and it pushes me back. Right behind me in the hallway is this set of steps, and there are hardwood steps, and I bang, 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 bang. And I'm at the bottom, you know, I'm not proud of this, but I'm a little kid, you know, and I'm screaming, you know, I'm screaming and crying. And my parents, who had a first floor bedroom, they come, you know, bounding out, you know, what the hell's going on here? What's, you know, it's middle of the night, like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm screaming. I'm saying, Ultraman is upstairs, you know. And so I'm sure my father heard intruder, right? So he runs upstairs And he's, you know, opening doors and stuff like this. My mother's holding me, trying to, you know, calm me down. And I'm crying like a crazy person. And my dad eventually comes to the top of the stairs and he looks at me disgusted. You know, I've awakened him and fallen down and whatever. And he says, there's nobody up here. So they take me upstairs and they do what parents do. You know, Dave, I know you're a dad. I'm a dad. You know, you open up the closet. There's nobody there, right? You look under the bed. You see, there's nobody there. They do that thing. My mom kissed me on the head and they put me to bed. Well, I eventually fall asleep. And the next day, I'm out with my friends. You know, I mean, this is back in the 70s. You know, kids didn't have these little games like this. I mean, you were outside playing on, you know, throwing balls and chasing people and stuff. And I was out there all day. My mom calls me in for dinner. And she says, oh, you are disgusting. You know, we got to get you a bath before dinner. And she's messing with me, you know, grabbing my shirt. And she takes off my T-shirt. And she's checking the bruises on me, you know, because I had fallen down the stairs. And she looks at my shoulder and she says, honey, what's this? Because it was very different. And I said, Mom, you know, I'm looking around. I said, Mom, I told you it was Ultraman. And she looked very sad. And then she, you know, kissed me on the forehead. And she said, honey, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. We got a bath and then had dinner and it was great and watched some crazy TV and went to bed. I didn't think about it, but a couple of days later, my father is taking me to the doctor. And we pull into the parking lot and he says, now listen, I don't know if this is going to be on air or whatever, but my dad was a mill worker and he was a tough guy and he spoke like a sailor, if you understand me.
Right. I know that path. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll be careful with what I say here. He says, he looks back at me and he says, now listen, I don't want to hear any of this crap about Ultraman. We go in there and you just keep your mouth shut about that stuff. And, you know, I said, sure, Dad, you know. So we get in there and the doctor gives me this exam, checks me out. He's looking at the bruises, which are now starting to turn a little yellow. You know, it's a couple of days later, making sure I don't have any, you know, breaks or whatever. And then he gets to my shoulder and he says, oh, sport. I said, what's this? And I'm looking around. I can see my dad in the corner. And my dad's giving me the look. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, for everybody who grew up in the 70s and earlier, you know, you didn't mess with your dad. Today, you do all kinds of crazy stuff. But back then, you didn't mess with your father.
No, he was in the house, yes.
Yeah, when he gave you the look, you got in line.
Right.
And so I saw him. He's glaring at me. And I just said, oh, I don't know. I fell, whatever. So anyway, Doc looks at it, examines it, manipulates a little bit. He says, okay, you know, put on the shirt, gave me a lollipop, and sent me on my way. My dad is taking me home. And as we pull into the driveway, he kind of looks back at me again and says, now listen, I don't want to ever hear any more of this Ultraman blankety blank blank. He goes, I don't want you scaring your sisters. I don't want you scaring your mother. You keep your mouth shut about that. And I said, okay, Dad, you know. And that's when I started to lie about it. You know, all through my life, I've been involved in sports and whatever. You know, you getting ready for a game, you throw your shirt off. Hey, Yos, what the hell is that? You know, I made up lies about like everything, like, I got bit by a bear. I got shot. Lightning hit me. You know, anything would have been better than to say, well, you know, I was abducted. You never want to kind of say that, right?
Yes.
And because they'd be fitting you for a jacket. But in addition to that, you know, this lie became a habit. You know, people put on eyeglasses every morning, or they put it in a hearing aid, or they brush their teeth or whatever. It just becomes a habit. You don't say, well, listen, I will now put on my jacket. No, you just throw it on, you know, and it just became one of those things. And so at this time, when I did the shoot and that thing stopped right above my head, it was almost like it was knocking on my door saying, we never left. And so what happened to me, Dave, was this, is that I started to lose my mind. I mean, I'm telling you, I started to lose my mind. Being a producer is a very difficult job. You have to be extremely organized.
Right.
Because you're always dealing with other people's money and they don't like it if you waste it. Right. So, I mean, there are a lot of boxes to check and you got to be on time and have all logistics and move big teams. And I'm great at it. I really am great at it because I'm very organized. I started messing up and I've known these guys for a long time. And so my team noticed there was something wrong with John. And I just could not, I would lose my mind. I would start to talk about something. I would, what? This sort of thing. And then I developed this incredible fear, like crippling fear of big skies and deep water. I couldn't get near them. So my team was looking at me. We're on this shoot. It's like 10 or 15 days. And what's going on, right?
John, what movie was that? Was that this movie you just finished?
No, sir. It was a previous movie. I'd rather not talk about it because the producers have, right, control of that. And
yeah,
and I, I don't want any kind of mistakes, with what I say about it.
Yeah. What I heard from Gary Langdon, I think his name is, he's a physicist and he's a scientist. He said that if a UFO just even 200 feet from me, 300 feet, they're downloading or uploading something so that when that UFO come over your head, you have been tagged. And I know what it's like being tagged. And I felt that story that you just said. Yeah. I felt it in here. I said, wow, you're very serious. And this is very, very serious stuff. But I think that UFO, it wasn't a coincidence that it come over your head and stayed there for a while. It was uploading, downloading from them following you. And once you're tagged, you're always tagged.
I think you're right, Dave. I didn't think that then, but I know that now. I know you're right about that. So I got home and my family didn't know, Remember, I've been lying about it for 45 plus years. And there were all kinds of problems because there's something wrong with Dad. There's something wrong with my husband, what I mean? And so I got really angry. I got really, really angry at myself, And so I decided that I was going to try to beat this thing. I was going to beat it. And the way I was going to beat it is I was going to find out how, if other people had these experiences, and I was going to find out how they dealt with them, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how this film started, actually. It was just me trying to grab information. And this was all for me to have a catharsis. It wasn't even supposed to be a film. It was just supposed to be my private kind of healing. Mm-hmm. And during that process, the more and more people I talked to, the more things I learned. And I could not believe, David, I could not believe how many, I want to say millions of people around the globe have had this kind of experience and other types of experience. Your experiences are a little bit different than mine than other people's,
right?
And I was just blown away. I was just blown away. But that's how you asked me specifically. I told you a very long story, but that's how this film started. And that's why I got involved.
Well, you're going to have more and more, and I'm retired, been in retirement for a few years.
Yes, sir.
When I wrote that book, that was my bucket list book. Just like you said, you have to get it off your chest. That book is something for me to say, okay, I'm admitting all this is happening. I'm breaking this out to people. And I'm saying this stuff happens. People look for it. Don't deny it. This disclosure we have is trickling in. And I'm not sure we can talk about this later. I know you got into the movie about it, about this disclosure. But also, your movie also had a 5-star rating and a 10-star rating, you said.
Yes, sir.
Did you tell us where you got those ratings?
Yeah. We had come out and, listen, we don't have a huge budget. And we don't have a really big advertising budget. But people who saw it were touched by it. Mm-hmm. And so we're on iTunes now and Amazon Prime and IMDb and YouTube. And so what happened is that the people that did see it ranked it, 5 out of 5 stars or 4.9 stars out of 5 or 9 stars out of 10 or 10 stars out of 10 because it touched them. And I think, Dave, you since you saw it, you understand
yes.
that, you know, when people think about UFO documentaries or paranormal documents, they're always kind of distant. They're almost like third person narratives. You know, you see like an old clip and then you hear in 1947, this happened. But that's not this movie. What this movie is like, immersion. The viewer is with me. They're, you know, walking beside me. They're on my shoulder. They're seeing these things first person, and they experience them. So they experience the uncomfortable moments, you know, the fear. They experience the elation of having some sort of information. They experience that suspense because they're inside the movie with us. And so I think that's what's happening is, you know, it's not a Hollywood film, but it's so totally different than a normal documentary that people took notice.
Very well produced, I might add. I saw the
movie
and I felt it. And like you said, that people who's had these experiences, and I know it's coming from your heart and why you're involved in this movie, abductions, that type of thing, is you're trying to put pieces of the puzzle together. And I am too. And I still have some relation with ETs that come in and out of my life. And I can feel it from you. And when I watched the movie, Whitley Strieber did a really great job. Could you talk about Whitley Strieber and what's he?
Oh, I can say a lot about Mr. Strieber. First of all, I did not know Mr. Whitley Strieber. We can talk about Debs maybe a little bit. She's one of the associate producers. She was the quantum hypnotherapist. Mm-hmm. But through her and her connections with another gentleman named Mark Sims, we were able to contact Mr. Whitley Strieber. Now, for people who don't know him, as you said, Dave, you know, this guy is very prolific. I mean, he's written, he wrote, you know, basically the handbook about these encounters in a book back in 1997 called Communion.
Right.
And he's written many books after that. The guy has had movies done after his work and whatever. He's a speaker, a philosopher, a real thought leader. And so during the production of this film, I knew that I wanted somebody who, number one, had walked this same sort of path, that had been shocked like me, that had walked in that fear, that had to overcome that fear and deal with it. And then how does he live his life afterwards? This is a big question. Mm-hmm. And so I was, I really, really wanted to talk to him. And he was a tough guy to get a hold of because, you know, as you can imagine, Dave, you know this, you know, you have some very, very sincere people in this community. And then you also have some people who are not as sincere, or I don't want to say charlatans, but you know what I'm saying. It's kind of like the Wild Wild West. You got some crazy people out there. And so he, of course, was very careful. And so he interviewed me. He wanted to make sure, you know, that I was real and
right.
That, uh-huh. you know, that the project was right. And of course we guaranteed him. And I said to him, I said, look, you know, Mr. Strieber, please, everything we film, we'll give to you first, and then you sign off on it. And if you don't sign off on it, it won't be in the film. And so he thought, well, okay, that's a good guarantee. And he felt comfortable after some time. So in preparation to interview him, I read every single one of his books. And then I wrote all these questions that look like
20-something books, right?
Oh, yeah, 20-something books about this subject.
Yeah.
And then I wrote these really detailed questions and sent them to him so he could approve them. And then after that, we actually did the interview. He never struck a single question. In fact, we talked about additional things that I hadn't even thought of. And as I keep referring to him as Mr. Strieber, I want to say to you that I would never be arrogant enough to say that Mr. Whitley Strieber and I are friends. I wouldn't say that. I would definitely say we're very friendly, very friendly. And we speak often, we exchange information often. But I cannot bring myself to call him Whitley. I have to call him Mr. Strieber. In the interview, I called him Mr. Strieber. I call him Mr. Strieber today. It's just because, as you said, you honor this man so much. He has so much bravery at a time when it was definitely not popular by any means. And he had the courage to put the things down, and he had the courage to also take that information and wrestle with it. Don't accept it as is, but figure out what does it mean. And so I have such an admiration for him. Anyway, so Mr. Schreiber, for those of you who haven't seen the film, what happens is that you see these different occasions, and some are very emotional. You will feel a little bit of fear. You will feel empathy. You will feel sadness. And in each one of these cases, we kind of go to Mr. Schreiber as a counterpoint. He simulates all this information, streamlines it, and then encapsulates it in ways that you can understand and you can apply to yourself. He really takes this information and puts it in bite-sized bits for the viewers to consume it and say, ah, well, that's what this means. And there are different ways to think about these things, as opposed to just, oh my God, this is crazy. What do I do? Instead of that, he entreats the audience to think about it in different ways they never would have. And so he is a treasure, and I honor him, and I am so privileged that he is part of our film. And he's been, I tell you, a real godsend in that he's promoted the film. He's run the trailer many times on his show. He's given interviews. He's a really, really fine man.
Right. And his experiences started very young, just like yours.
Yes, he didn't know that. He didn't know that in the beginning. In the 80s, when anomalous stuff was happening to him and his wife in their apartment in New York, and then, you know, really culminated to some really incredible things in the cabin that they had, the weekend cabin. He was not aware of that. But then after some time, he started to put this stuff together and realized that he had been contacted as a child, and he had gone through a process of education. In fact, that's completely detailed in his book, The Secret School.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And we get into that, you know, that's a tough subject. You know, when we talk about children, I mean, you and I are both fathers. I know that parents, you know, we're very possessive of our children, you know, they're ours, and we don't like anybody, you know, interfering with our children. And it's a touchy subject, but we, as you know, we address that and we talk about why that is and how that is. And Whitley Strieber, Mr. Strieber, was very instrumental in describing that and helping us come to grips with some of that thinking.
Did he ever give you any insight, John, anything new that you heard from him that you haven't heard before?
Well, this is tough because it's a big subject. One of the things I say in the film at the end is I say, you know, there's so much more for me to learn as a person. This thing is so much bigger than shiny lights in the sky, right? What does it mean to us as a people? What does it mean to me as a person? It completely changes the way you see yourself and the way you see the world. And when you start to do that, your entire paradigm for living, for doing what you do, changes as well. It almost feels like that old movie, that Jim Carrey movie, The Truman Show. You realize mm-hmm. that you're kind of inside of a story instead of making the story. We all think that we have this control. Okay. Well, having said that, all of this phenomena, and I'm talking about near-death experiences, speaking with spirits and the dead, UFOs, ET encounters, mediums, all of this stuff. It seems that there is some sort of connection amongst all of this. And I mean, I have a couple different ideas about that. I don't know, but I have a couple different ideas. And one of the things that we talked about, you asked a question about what did he, you know, did he bring something new to the table? What he was talking about is somehow that these ETs, what we're calling ETs, are somehow connected with our dead. Now, he and I chewed over some different ideas, and one of the ideas is that in fact, the dead aren't dead, in that they are in somehow transmuted into a different dimension, and that these ETs traffic in that dimension, and so therefore, they're somehow connected that way. I also have this other idea that, you know, if these guys are very, very advanced technology, you know, perhaps that technology forces its way into that space-time, literally bending space-time, and how they travel from one place to another kind of pierces that veil, that dimension. And so we tend to see them in the same sort of light or in the same sort of place. That you know, they kind of open a window, and as they're coming in, we see, you know, that part of us that has passed on. But it's very fascinating. It's a little scary.
Yeah. I've been learning some things, John, about a lot of ETs believe in reincarnation. Maybe that's why they're involved with our past, you know, lives. Also, I heard that we can carry around an extra soul in ourselves.
Yeah.
And this
Somebody
is
said
why,
that.
And that's why they keep track of us. And the one that I met said that I was supposed to meet you and I like you. And it was kind of like a father-daughter thing, but it's still, and I had another one that told me in the same place just a year later, and he said that he knows that ETs are involved in reincarnation. I could have some reincarnation in me somehow or other. So, yeah. And let's get back to the kids. I know right now it's a political hot potato for, you know, kids in school. There's a lot of kids who disappear. A lot of people disappear.
Yes.
Have you found out anything that ETs are taking them?
I have not. And I, you know, like all things, I think that we, not you and I, but we as a people, we as a race, we can fabulate things. We group all kinds of things together, you know, that, you know, these people are all missing, these children are all missing. So, well, you know, it must be ETs taking them. Okay. Well, maybe that's a portion of them, but some of them are also being captured by really horrible people
traffic.
Who look like just look you and I.
Yeah, traffic.
Some of them are runaways and just get lost in the system. Some of them die, unfortunately. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things here. I have, you know, and this gets into, you know, who are these guys? Who are they? And one of the things that I talk about is, I don't know that you and I and us are smart enough, or our brains are big enough, or our egos are small enough to understand that many possibilities are there. They're not all grays. They're not all reptoids. They're not all, you know, enlightened masters. But there's a bunch of them. And you know, the way to look at it is this. You know, if you took every citizen from the United States, just the United States, and you lined them up, there's a whole lot of people that don't look like other people, you know?
Right.
And you know, I mean, you saw in the film that I kind of use this ship that leaves from, you know, Earth and it goes to Mars. And there's a guy from Africa. There's a guy from United States. And there's somebody there from Norway. And there's somebody there from Asia.
Right.
You know, they get out and the Martian takes a look at them and says, well, which one is the Earthling? Because they all look very different. They're all different heights. They're all different weights, you know, because of their evolution and their diets. They look much different, you know, but they're all from one planet. So think about this. You know, this is why I say, I don't know if our brains are big enough. Okay, you have one planet and you have so much diversity here. Okay, well, if we accept that life is prolific, how many planets are we talking about? Okay, well, if you just talk about one other planet, okay, well, how many races are on that planet? 4 or 5, I don't know. How many races on this planet? Okay, and then how many races in the universe? Well, I'm sure they come in all kinds of sizes, and you know. And so in addition to that, just like everybody here has a different sort of agenda, you know, somebody from somewhere could have the agenda of just scientific observation. Somebody could be here for recreation and exploring. Somebody could be here for military conquest. You know, but what I'm saying is one size doesn't fit all. That's all I mean.
You're right. And there's a lot of humanoid ETs out there in the galaxy. There's a lot of planets that's got a lot of life on it. Then NASA. NASA. It's NASA. But they see and they're researching ETs right now. And they're out there. And the military is also disclosing some things, but they're not going to disclose everything. And I'm sure we're going to get into that. But I'd look at things like they come along very slowly. And for me, and when I see these videos of orbs and things of that nature, it's just like you and I think, okay, those are orbs. Fine. That's good. You know, I've seen some close-up craft, you know, so I know what they look like, a lot of them, but they're not all the same. Just like you said, they're different alien types that are even here walking amongst us. And in the abduction process, who knows, we could have humans involved with some back-engineered ET technology that actually abducts us and makes it look like a smokescreen. Have you thought about that?
You know what? That's a really good point, Dave. Thank you very much for bringing it up. You know, when we talk about, you know, who are these guys and where they come from and stuff like this, I get the feeling, and once again, I'm not saying that I have the answer. I got yelled at the other day, you know, about the name of the film, right? Alien Abduction Answered. Oh, you're Mr. Answer. No, no, no. It says answers. It doesn't say the answer,
right.
Just some of the answers, okay? So, but I have this feeling that you could probably group these entities and these phenomena into four basic groups. And hear me out on this. Like you said, there's technology that we, that our governments around the world have produced that we never knew about, okay? I mean, for goodness sake, the B-2 bomber. Nobody knew about it until they used it, right? Okay, so there's a silly example, but a real example. Okay, so we have all kinds of technology that we don't know. So I think some of the stuff that we're encountering, abductions, craft, things in the sky, whatever, are technology that governments are using, okay? Some sort, okay. That's one source. Another source is I get this distinct feeling that the Earth itself, if you think about it more like an electric ball, because all of this matter, all of these atoms, everything else, they produce an electrical field, electromagnetic field. Mm-hmm. And there's some sort of intelligence. You know, even when you think about magnets, you know, if you take two north and you push them together, they don't. Well, why? There's a certain sort of rule. There's an intelligence there that says these two don't go together. You flip it, you get the north and the south, and they go.
Right.
Okay, there's some sort of intelligence here that has lived with us since the very beginning. And we have called them gnomes, sprites, fairies, people of the valley, people of the woods, this sort of thing. And, you know, now we're very cosmopolitan. I mean, you know, you leave your car, you go to your office, you go from the office to the store. You don't go into the woods. You don't see this. We're totally separate from it. So I think there's that sort of thing. You know, there are certain lights and earth lights that people can't explain that are coming from this intelligence of Gaia or intelligence of Earth. And that's another source.
Right.
The third source, I think, is really the nuts and bolts. Look, I'm not saying to come from Venus or whatever, okay? But watch what we're doing, right? We build craft, and we send them to Mars and to Venus and to Jupiter and everywhere, okay? And what do we do there? We take samples, of course we do, of gas, of radiation, whatever. If we put people in there and we found some sort of animal, do you think we take a sample of that? You darn tootin' we would. You know, think about it. Think about what we do here on Earth. You know, helicopter comes down, sees a caribou, shoots it with a dart, comes down, checks it, examines it, puts a tag in its ear so it can watch its migration, and then lets it go. Look, if that caribou could talk to other caribou, it would say, look, this craft came out of the sky, yeah, and it shot me, stunned me. I couldn't believe it. It was something I couldn't understand. And then it tested me, and then it tagged me.
Yeah.
And another, it sounds like
another caribou would say, you're crazy.
Yeah. So is the, there are some nuts and bolts, and these are craft from other places and other people, aliens, whatever. And then the fourth source, to my mind, is what you and I and the world have called for years of angels and demons. These are, in the new parlance, these are these ultra-terrestrials, these things, this intelligence that's outside of our dimension, outside of our vision, outside of our perception, that somehow press themselves into our dimension, interact with us in some ways, and then pull back without a trace. You know, and it's,
John, it's funny you mention angels and demons. My third book that I'm working on right now is Angels and Watchers, and I'm going to say Mysteries of our History, probably for a subtitle.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I'm working on that now. I'm only about 20% done, but the research on that, and it's taking me, I had a couple of scientists tell me it'll take you to a ledge, and you're going to have to take a direction some way or another. And it's like, if I bring in the ET element, then I'm going to make people in the religious area a little peeved. But if I go straight and stay with the fundamental direction, then it's going to be like boring to me, because I know that history has more to it than what we see.
100%.
You know that. And you know that. You've been involved in this stuff for a long time.
Yeah.
And I love talking to you, John.
That's, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I can't wait for that book. Like, I can't wait to read that book.
The angels and demons are angels.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's going to. I had to do somewhat of an edit for the second book, Senseless Wars, and it's something that I need to do. And it's just like you. Sure. You need to make movies and let people know what's going on and what's going on out there. I'm writing books. You're making movies. That's our part of sharing with people the truth about things.
We yes, sir.
Pick up the truth.
Yes, sir.
And, yeah. And, but it's, it, yeah, that when you told me that craft come over your head, I've had that happen to me, and they're watching you, John. They're uploading, downloading.
Yeah. I had some stuff happen to me just recently. Really kind of shocked me a little bit.
Okay.
I don't know how much time we have in this segment.
We got a couple. Go ahead.
Okay. This just happened. You asked me, you know, has anything been happened recently?
Right.
And so I made the movie, and I kind of thought, okay, look, this part of my life is done. Okay. I kind of just encapsulate. And these guys are done with me. And I was very wrong. I think what happened was there was a door that was shut for many, many years. And then they knocked on it and then opened it up. And now it's open wide. So the other night, I have a fire pit up behind my house. I'm out there with a couple of people. And
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This light pops up in the sky, just out of nowhere. And I live near an airport. So I've seen airplanes of all sorts, military planes, all my life. And so I say, that's not an airplane. And I can see that there are no identifying marks. There's no light on the starboard side. I can tell. And this thing starts to move all irregularly. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, what are you doing? This is crazy. Other people see it. And then it pops out of existence. Then a little while later, comes back. And there's something else with it. And they're doing crazy kind of flips and around each other. And somebody says, is that a plane? And then you can see the planes flying over us towards the airport. But this thing, these things are thousands of feet and higher. I said, no, I don't think so. And so then those go away. And about an hour later, one pops up, two pop up, three, five or six pop up. They go into formation. They weave around each other. They go over here. They weave back. I mean, really put on a light show. Well, the people I'm with, they're losing their minds. And they're saying, John, are you doing this? Which I thought was so funny because I said, yeah, I'm doing that. I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting here.
That happened.
With my marshmallow trying to roast. So anyway, the next day, I go into this back room in my home that we used to use for our kids when they were little. And I check doors all the time, and it's on the second floor. And this lock on this window is wide open. It's wide, you know. And so I said to my wife, I said, honey, you know, did you? She said, I haven't been in there in weeks. I know. I didn't do it. So I, you know, I didn't think about it. You know, I kind of just locked it, whatever. And so that night, and this is just about a week ago, Dave, that night, I wake up in the middle of the night. You know, I have these little lights that you plug into receptacles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, you get up to go to the restroom or something, you know, smash your foot. Yeah. I open my eyes because I feel something in the room, like some sort of temperature change or something. I open up my eyes and I can't see a single one of those lights. And I'm looking around and I'm pissed off. I'm thinking, oh, well, did, you know, was there a thunderstorm? Did the lights, you know, the electricity go out? And but I'm angry. I'm very angry. And I feel like something's disturbed me, like something woke me up. And the room is completely black. My wife is beside me. I'm completely black. And I say, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you disturbing me in my home? And I start to talk very loudly, totally irrationally. I have no idea why. But it was as though I'm talking to something right there. And in response to my anger, the dark changes color into two different types of darkness, like a gray and a darker black. And it almost looked like a thundercloud roiling, you know, mm-hmm. like this. And I'm yelling at it. And I'm saying, listen, you know, this is that all you've got? And I'm pissed off and I'm trying to sleep. And why are you bothering me? And you didn't want to. And I'm propped up on my elbows on my pillow, yelling at this thing. My wife is completely sound asleep, not moving.
You think they put her, they knocked her out? Just
like- Well, listen to this rest of the story, and you tell me. So I'm angry, and I'm sitting there, and I said, well, listen, I don't have time for this. I said, I'm going to sleep, and you leave me the hell alone. And I close my eyes, and I have my arms folded across my chest. You know, I'm angry. And I go to sleep. An hour or so later, I reckon, my wife is shaking me awake. And she says, honey, do you want to turn off your reading lamp, which is right here beside me? It wasn't on. And I opened my eyes and I could see it's on. And I swear to you, I don't know why I said this, but this came out of my mouth. I said, no, they're not done yet. And I close my eyes. She closes her eyes. That's it. So the next morning, I wake up. I'm the first to wake up. The lamp is out. And I'm looking around, and I remember the damn lights and the plug. So I'm going around checking. They all work. So I go to the restroom. I'm washing my face, brush my teeth, that sort of thing. And something in my mind tells me to go check that back room. Remember where the window was on?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I go to that window. I go to that window. The lock is locked. But we have a little solar cell radio. And it's always on that ledge right beside that, right below that window. It's always in the left-hand corner. It was picked up, turned around. So the switching dials are facing outside the window and set into the other corner which doesn't make any sense at all, because the solar cell was pointed inside the room, not out to the sun. And I looked at that and I went, son of a gun.
Yeah.
Son of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So something is happening.
Yeah. You remind me of myself and the things that I go through. And the
two good looking guys.
Yeah. The two good looking guys. but the invisible ETs in your house. They're actually invisible. And I have them touch me on the arm, on the leg here the last couple of weeks. I've had some weird things, just like you're talking. Paranormal things, except they're not paranormal. They're ET related.
Yeah.
John, it's been a pleasure on this first segment. We're going to do two segments with John Yost. And this first segment, we're going to end. But we're going to have another segment in which I will release and air maybe a couple of days after the first segment. So as we don't wear you out watching the videos, we want to do this in a way that people will take more interest and have more patience in watching. And you've been listening to Dave Emmons and Dave Emmons Show. It's chit chat, and I leave off the S. Yeah. So it's a we had John Yost, senior producer, and he's made this movie, Alien Abduction Answers, and we played a little bit of up front, and we want you to go see the movie. And John, we're going to be right back with the next episode. We're going to close this one out, everybody. Thank you for viewing and watching us, and we'll have John right back with the next episode soon.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.